Brexit. That's why they formed AUKUS. As for America, after Afghanistan, America needs a new enemy to justify its $740 billion military budget and to keep expanding its empire and ensure corporate profits. This is the crux of the issue. Capitalists, imperialists, they hate competition. They want to monopolize. They want to assert dominance and control over every market, every situation. And in the great power struggle between the West and China, the West is scared. Not because China actually poses a threat, but because China proposes an alternate way of doing things and is able to rival them through a different model, making theirs look outdated, weak, and obsolete. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Russia will do what it can to assist the United Kingdom and could potentially even come to the rescue amid problems linked to rising energy costs, the country's ambassador has suggested. Russia's ambassador to Britain, Andrei Kellin, also denied that Russia is withholding gas supplies, appearing to suggest commitments to increase supply will take time to take effect. The article you're about to hear has been written by Ben Hatton, a writer and journalist, a member of political staff of Press Association. The piece is titled, Russia Will Come to Rescue of UK If Needed During Gas Crisis, Ambassador Says. Russia will do what it can to assist the United Kingdom and could potentially even come to the rescue amid problems linked to rising energy costs, the country's ambassador has suggested. The Russian ambassador to the United Kingdom, Andrei Kellin, also denied that Russia is withholding gas supplies, appearing to suggest commitments to increase supply will take time to take effect. The Russian ambassador to the United Kingdom also said that it is his understanding that no decision has yet been taken in Russia as to whether President Putin will attend the COP26 climate conference being hosted in Glasgow from the end of October. Asked on BBC One's Andrew Marr show if Russia understands the pressures of gas supply and price increases on people in Europe and the United Kingdom, Andrei Kellin said Russia is following the situation, but appeared to play down the significance of the issues in the United Kingdom. However, he also suggested Russia will come to the rescue if needed. Mr. Kellin said, if it will be an opportunity, we will come to rescue. We will do what we can, of course, to alleviate difficult conditions which are now being created. The ambassador said Russia has increased gas supplies to assist Europe amid a global increase in prices, but also argued the country could do more if the controversial Nord Stream 2 pipeline were to be approved. He also told the BBC that Russia has increased gas supplies to Western Europe and cited two different figures, an increase of both 10% and 15%. Asked if Russia is withholding supplies for political reasons, the ambassador said, "Certainly we do not withhold it for political reasons." He said Russia had increased gas supply to Western Europe through Ukraine by 10%, but added that the pipeline cannot increase capacity further. He said the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is ready to operate and that he expects Germany will give the new pipeline the go-ahead. The new 764-mile pipeline runs across the Baltic Sea to Germany, bypassing Ukraine, but has sparked opposition from the United States and many Eastern European countries worried about energy security and climate goals. Ambassador Andrei Kalin's comments follow claims that Russia has been limiting gas supplies in a bid to prod regulators in Europe into moving quickly to certify their controversial new pipeline, Nord Stream 2. Last week, Government Minister Lord Agnew of Alton said spiralling energy costs were nothing to do with supply shortages, but were due to a geopolitical move by Russia to put pressure on Europe. Challenged by BBC journalist Andrew Marr that there is no evidence in publicly available data that Russia has increased supply through Ukraine by 10%. Andrei Kalin said he is not a specialist in that area, but added, gas travels at not the speed of light, of course, it goes very slowly by that. So what do you expect? Once the president has said we will supply more gas and tomorrow prices will go down. This is not possible. Asked if Russia is doing everything it can to get more and cheaper gas to Western Europe, Ambassador Kalin said Nord Stream 2 would help to address those issues. And asked if it is gas supplies will increase from 1st of November, whether or not Nord Stream 2 is granted approval, Ambassador Kalin said, I simply do not know. But we have, as I said, we increase it by 15% right now. Elsewhere in the interview, the Russian ambassador insisted that BBC journalist Sarah Rainsford, who was expelled from Russia earlier this year, can return to the country if visas are granted to Russian journalists to work in Britain. Meanwhile, Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said on Saturday, 16th of October, that Russian gas consumption is running at a record high, but Moscow is still ready to increase supplies to Europe should it receive such requests. European spot gas prices have surged by 800% this year as demand has recovered after the coronavirus pandemic. Prices eased earlier this month after Russia, Europe's key gas supplier, said it could deliver more gas, but these supplies have yet to materialize. I want to underline that we in Russia have record high gas consumption figures this year, which is also due to active economic recovery, Alexander Novak said in an interview with the Rossiya 1 TV channel broadcast, according to Russian news agencies. Russia, whose gas production and exports to the European Union are already near record highs, has said it needs to finish filling its own gas shortage reserves before it increases supplies to Europe's spot market. It plans to complete this by the end of October. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak did not say how large Russia's gas reserves were, but estimated that European underground facilities were short of around 25 billion cubic meters of natural gas. He insisted high domestic demand would not stop Russia offering more gas supplies to Europe if it received such requests.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. In case you've just joined us on this series of the show, we've been talking about the women in the life of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. In the studio with me, I have the privilege and honor of being accompanied by my darling sister, Sister Razia Shavni. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam, my sister, Sister Zainab.
Thank you for being with us.
So happy to be here to have a lovely conversation with you.
Inshallah ta'ala, likewise.
We're talking about the Prophet's appreciation towards women. We have the case of Fatima bint Asad, Imam Ali's mother,
who raised him from childhood.
He says about her, after Abi Talib, no one was kind to me as much as Fatima bint Asad, even kinder to him than her own children. He sees that. He acknowledges. So far, we were talking about the Prophet's conduct with the women, how the Prophet started a timeless method or frame of view or, you know, world view about, you know, men's treatment of women, and not only that, but family life, parenting, spousal relationship, all that included, right? So one of the instances where we see in the life of the Noble Prophet is that he used to sometimes consult women who were around him. Because so many people say that women are not as smart as men, and you know, you shouldn't consult with them. You're in charge, do not even consider their opinion. But when you see the life of the Prophet, you see that he used to sometimes ask women's opinion in certain women, of course, women who had the talent that the Noble Prophet could refer to.
Exactly, who had worthy opinions.
Exactly. And we want to see whether there are instances in the Noble Quran where women are consulted with by men, and whether it's okay or not. And there are two instances. For example, one is with regards to the topic of lactating and weaning children. And that is in chapter Baqarah, verse number 233, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells husbands and wives to consult each other with regards to the period of, you know, when to wean their children. That's one instance. The second instance, which is much more straightforward and clear, crystal clear, is with regards to Shu'aib's daughters.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That they were, mashallah, so tactful, so wise and knowledgeable, that the Quran, not only wise, knowledgeable, and, you know, they were also working, you know, they were employed, of course, not officially, but their father was an old man, and they were the ones who were taking care of the family's financial needs. They would, you know, take the animals, the sheep. They were shepherds, right? And in that society, in that, still in that culture, when we have the instance of them taking the sheep's, the herd, for watering them, and it was so patriarchic that the men wouldn't let them to approach the water.
To have access to the water.
Right. And then Prophet Moses, he was witnessing the scene. And
he took care of it like a hero.
Exactly. He's like, why are you women standing in the back? First of all, because of their haya, their modesty, that they didn't want to mix in with men and, you know,
go shoulder to shoulder.
Exactly. And also because obviously the patriarchal, they didn't allow them to even come close and to, you know, like ladies, there was no ladies first, men first. So after seeing this, obviously such women who are in the society, who have experienced being with men and working with them and seeing instances of, and seeing Moses' behavior, mashallah, they had a very good analytical power, very smart women. They come to their father and the way they had analyzed the behavior of Moses is very beautiful. They say, قالت إحداهما, one of the two women said, يا أبتي, father, استأجره, hire him, إن خير من استأجرت القوي الأمين. Indeed, the best you can hire is a powerful and trustworthy man. قوي الأمين. So because they have seen him.
And Nabi Musa was really like freakishly strong. So strong he could kill someone with a single punch.
Yeah. Exactly. Not only that, but he was also trustworthy.
That's the perfect combination
of a good
worker, labor worker.
No, good husband. Because yes. In the hadith also, when someone comes to ask the imam's opinion, mm-hmm. he says, give your daughter to someone who is amin, who is a good trust keeper.
Yes, exactly.
And they had realized that. And then Shu'aib himself offers one of his daughters,
proposes him on behalf of his daughter. More of that after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back to Muslim Lady here in the studio. I'm with my darling sister Razia Shamili, and we're talking about the position of women in the life of Rasulullah. It was obvious from the conduct of Nabi Musa ala Nabino alayhi salam that, you know, he saw these two women, they needed to get their business done. He offered his services, he helped them out, he walked them home without abusing them, assaulting them, he took care of the sheep. When they said, you walk in front of us so we wouldn't have to lead the way and you'd be checking us out from behind, he was like, okay, cool, that totally makes sense. I'll lead the way, even though I don't even know where your father lives, right? But his conduct, like you said, it exuberated so much haya, so much trustworthiness, so much modesty, so much, okay, I feel safe around this man.
Exactly.
Right?
That they took him to their father.
Exactly.
These women who are so reserved, who stay back and not go mingle with men, they trust him so much that they say, come with us.
Exactly.
Follow us, we will take you to our home.
Yeah.
One of them ends up marrying him. So this is another instance of consulting women, where a prophet Shu'aib, listens to the opinion of his daughter, and it brings so much prosperity. It changes the fate of an ummah, right? Mm. This marriage and everything. And also, in the life of the noble prophet, we see that he used to consult some women, for one of which were
Umm Salama.
Also Lady Khadija, right? I think...
And Amir al-Mu'min did so with Sayyidah Fatima, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
Definitely. Mm. There is one part of Nahj al-Balagha where Amir al-Mu'min, alayhi salam, says that, do not load women with that which does not concern them. So we have to always have a balance in life. When it says ar-rajul qawwamun, at the same time, you do your consultation, you act democratically, you ask their opinion in the fields that they have specialty, but don't put too much, don't burden them with more than they can
handle.
And this is good for their beauty. If you want a fresh...
If you want to preserve that beauty, that youth, this, that...
Jubilance?
Yes, exactly. It's best for you not to stress her out so much. Don't give her sass, don't give her drama. It's not good for her skin. Support her in her endeavor.
Skin.
It's not good for your skin at all. She
happy
will slay you.
Happy wife, happy life, right? And about Lady Khadija, we can say that the noble prophet, of course, became a prophet when he was with her.
Yes.
Right, so that big revelation, that big revolution happened when he was with her.
Yeah.
Right? That mission, it was so heavy, such a burden, such a hard burden. First of all, that the noble prophet, receiving the wahy was very very difficult for him. And also so worried. He was so worried that would people listen to me? I'm going to go to these people. And obviously, it took 3 years for him. First, his ashira wa andar ashira dikal aghrabin. And then little by little by little, he made the whole public. You know, he openly declared his prophethood.
Yeah.
So all that stress, but he had by him a very understanding wife. Right?
Someone said something really interesting to me a while back. She said to me that men grow with stress while women break in stress. And I found it very interesting. And when I really looked at it, except, you know, where certain circumstances where there's an exception in everything. We're not talking about that. But in general, generally speaking about it, men, they go out to the world, they stress themselves out, they need to, you know, analyze life and assess different aspects of it and deal with bankruptcy and money and finance and economy and politics and this and that and all that just grinds them in and nurtures them into better people. But if women have to deal with that, well, first of all, acne, their skin will break out. Men, no matter how busy he is, the moment his head hits the pillow, he's out.
He's gone.
Yeah, like a light. But women, they'll stay up all night and they'll let it eat them up on the inside, you know? So when she said that to me, again, exceptions aside, I felt like, you're right. Let him go out and be stressed. I'll be here and act as his refuge. Exactly. As his refuge, as his anchor, as his safe place.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
But when you're saying these, it's like so far away from the reality.
Exactly.
Of the world.
It's how far from practical.
I'm looking at my own life. It's the case with many, many women out there, especially in the West. Because still in some Muslim countries, men carry out the burden for the family. But in many parts of Europe, for example, women are like brave-hearted men, putting their chest straight forward to all the hardships and challenges of life. It hits them. And they actually, I don't know if this is what they really like or if they've been brought up to act like this. These need to be studied and analyzed in its own place and time. I was just going to say one sentence about the relationship between Lady Khadija salamullah alayha and the noble Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Look at her view. If only, you know, men love their wives to praise them, to understand them. They're going under so much hardship. They want their wives to actually acknowledge it. In the same way that women like men to acknowledge what they do, it's a two-sided street. So Khadija used to say, Muhammad, know that Allah will not leave you alone. You've never abandoned serving your family. You've always been a family man. You've been perfect. And observing the bonds of your relationship, your kinships, right? You've never hurt anyone and have never refrained from assisting others. Look at the high esteem that Lady Khadija had regarding her beloved husband.
And how much she validates and acknowledges him and his virtues.
And accepts his authority.
Yeah.
One thing that men love to have. Some people say, if you want to be the queen, make your husband the king first, you'll be the queen.
Unfortunately, we have are all out of time for today's discussion of Muslim Lady, but inshallah, more of that on further episodes here on IRIB English Radio. Until then, I leave you all in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I know I'm waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. I wish that somehow you'd tell me out of love.
Salam, and let us ponder on a beautiful formula of solidarity of the Ummah, as mentioned by Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. This hadith has been widely mentioned by both Sunni and Shia Muslims. The stars are a security for the people of the earth against drowning when at sea. And my Ahlul Bayt are a security to the people of the earth against discord. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In early October, financial secrets of some of the world's richest and most powerful people were uncovered. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists released the Pandora Papers, an exposé of financial secrets, offshore dealings, hidden wealth, tax avoidance, and in some cases money laundering of dozens of world leaders, politicians, and public figures from across the world. Some 35 current and former leaders and more than 300 public officials are featured in the files from offshore companies. It surely wasn't an easy task to uncover such secrets. More than 600 journalists in 117 countries have been trawling through files from 14 sources for months. It's almost 12 million documents. In particular, it includes 6.4 million documents, almost 3 million images, more than 1 million emails, and almost 500,000 spreadsheets. The Pandora Papers show a complex network of companies set up to hide the ownership of money or assets. Imagine someone having a property in the UK, but owns it via a chain of companies based in other countries or offshore.
We just think that this is the point where ending tax havens has to be done. They serve no useful economic purpose. All they do is allow large institutions and teams of tax accountants and lawyers to actually really pit themselves against the poorest countries who just don't have the resource to fight that. So what happens is they facilitate huge volumes of money moving away from the very places where most of us want to see it spent.
These offshore countries or territories are in places that are first, easy to set up companies, second, have laws that make tracing or identifying owners difficult, and third, there is no corporation tax, or at least very low ones. With this description, now it's easy to understand which places in the world can be called tax havens. Places such as Switzerland, Singapore, and British overseas territories such as the Cayman Islands and the British Virgin Islands. Above all, the Pandora Papers reveal how offshore finances and secretive wealth have infiltrated politicians. Most of the names in the list belong to leaders whose countries are struggling with financial problems, like Kenya and Jordan.
The world is facing a shortage of financing development. So one way of deterring that is actually by countries making sure that any well student from a country is actually repatriated back. And I'm very happy with what happened in Angola, where the daughter of the former president, all the wealth has actually been repatriated back. What has happened in Nigeria, Sanabasha and the group. And these are things that actually we need to see starting happening in Kenya, because we believe in Kenya there has been a massive capital flight, people stealing and getting money outside there.
Leaked documents show that King Abdullah II has amassed a secret $100 million property empire in Malibu, Washington, and London. Jordan has been having financial struggles for the past couple of years. It's one of the poorest Arab countries and relies heavily on international aid. The Pandora Papers also threatened to sabotage the political careers of two European Union leaders. Apparently, the Prime Minister of the Czech Republic used an offshore investment company to buy a $22 million house in the south of France. Andre Babis is up for election, and this revelation won't do any good for his campaign. Meanwhile, a law firm founded by Cypriot President Nikos Anastasiadis is accused of hiding the assets of a controversial Russian billionaire behind fake company owners. There are even bigger names in the papers, like former British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Before he came to power, Blair attacked the offshore tax avoidance system.
Millionaires with the right accountant pay nothing, whilst pensioners pay VAT on fuel. Offshore trusts get tax relief, while homeowners pay VAT on insurance premiums. We will create a tax system that is fair, which is related to ability to pay.
The name of Ukraine's president, Vladimir Zelensky, who once pledged to clean up his country's notoriously corrupt economy, is also named in the leak. But perhaps the biggest revelation is the fact that many of these wealthy people managed to set up companies to secretly buy property in the UK. The documents expose the owners of some of the 95,000 offshore firms behind the purchases. It's not clear whether the UK government failed to introduce a register of offshore property owners despite repeated promises, or London just decided to turn a blind eye to the whole matter. The Azerbaijani president, Ilham Aliyev, and his family are one good example. It's been revealed that the Aliyevs and their close associations have been looting their own country. The investigation found the Aliyevs have secretly been buying expensive properties in the United Kingdom worth nearly £400 million. So far, it's been revealed that a big network of offshore companies helped the Aliyevs secretly own vast real estate holdings in London. It seems that what the Aliyevs do is a very private family business, since Azerbaijan's president's two daughters, his son, his father-in-law, and two of the family's close friends own these buildings. For years, they have been buying London's prominent historical buildings, commercial developments, and luxury apartments in prestigious neighborhoods. The documents show that Aliyev began stealing from Azerbaijanis and turning the money into luxury buildings right from the beginning of his term in 2003. Aliyev is now into his fourth term as Azerbaijan's president. He managed to turn the tiny country into an increasingly autocratic regime built on the jailing of journalists, lawyers, and activists. Azerbaijan's president is also accused of orchestrating fraudulent elections and massive corruption. Aliyev's son, Haydar, acquired his first offshore company when he was just starting grade school. His daughter, Arzu, got her first company when she turned 19. Arzu lives a lavish life in London, and everybody treats her like a princess. While the source of all the money spent on these properties are still unknown, reporters found that at least eight of their companies received multi-million dollar infusions of cash from vast money laundering and transfer systems. The Aliyev family's rule over Azerbaijan started when Ilham's father, Haydar Aliyev, took control of the country in 1993. He was a longtime Soviet official, and after Azerbaijan gained independence in 1991, he started to gain power. Haydar Aliyev was an authoritarian, and under his leadership, Azerbaijan became yet another corrupt petrostate. The newest revelations show that his son followed in his footsteps. After all, a country that's never had a real election, and its leadership is passed from father to son, is most prone to corruption and misuse of power. It's not clear if anybody mentioned in the Pandora Papers will be found guilty or face charges. But one thing is clear. In the new digital world, hiding money is not as easy as it used to be. The Pandora Papers are the latest in a series of whistleblower-led investigations that have rocked the world of finance in recent years. It's surely the latest, but it won't be the last.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most High. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum, and so welcome to your program. Today's special from IRIB English Radio. What is the topic of today's episode? It's about unity in diversity.
Today, Wednesday, is the 13th of Rabiul Awwal, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 28th of May, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 20th of October, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is chapter and fall, verse 46 of the Holy Quran.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. وأطيعوا الله ورسوله ولا تنازعوا فتفشلوا وتذهب ريحكم واصبروا إن الله مع الصابرين.
And obey Allah and His Messenger, and do not dispute and thus lose courage, and then your strength would depart, and be patient. Indeed, Allah is with the patient.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
God introduces the Prophet, Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him and his pure progeny, as the axis of practical unity for Muslims. This axis includes all deeds of words of the Prophet, who, as the history of the Islam testifies, prevented discord and created unity among Muslims in order to strengthen the political and social basis of the Ummah. The Prophet, after migrating to Medina from Mecca, entered into treaties and social contracts, which are among the most evident way of fostering unity. By creating brotherhood among Muslims, the Holy Prophet turned the enmity of the days of paganism into blessings and mercy.
Sallallahu ala Taha, khayri l-khalqi wa ahlaha. Sallallahu ala Taha, khayri l-khalqi wa ahlaha. Khayrul khalqi huwa al-hadi.
Today is a special unity in diversity. Islam regards all people as equal before the laws of Allah, black and white, Arab and non-Arab, male and female, rich and poor. Islam brings them all together and addresses its commands and prohibitions to them all. So whoever obeys Allah and His Messenger will enter paradise, and whoever disobeys Allah and His Messenger will enter hell, as He says in chapter Fussilat, chapter 41, verse 46, Whosoever does righteous good deeds, it is for the benefit of his own self, and whosoever does evil, it is against his own self, and your Lord is not at all unjust to his servants.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Please remember, please note that in many Muslim lands, Muslims have been very much active in order to render public services to other people. We all know that, for example, in some countries and nations, in many Muslim countries and nations, for example, in India, in Pakistan, in some African communities and nations, Muslims have been really very beneficial to all people, not only to Muslims, but also to other people, followers of other religions. For example, there have been many Muslim merchants and traders who initiated such great projects like building a hospital, or for example, orphanages, or for example, other public welfare institutes in order to support other Muslims. And besides Muslims, even non-Muslims may come and benefit from the services rendered to the aid. Now we find that this is the Islamic integration and unity is the is one of the most important messages of the political aspect or political side of the Islamic religion.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every bar.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
Unity teaches us to be selfless. This is one lesson from Unity. None of you will have faith until he loves for his brother what he loves for himself. Quite beautifully, this narration includes both Muslims and non-Muslims in relation to maintaining brotherhood. Our Prophet is directing us about how a believer should invite a non-believer to Islam, just how he loves Islam for himself. For this reason, it is recommended to supplicate for the disbeliever to be guided. The meaning of love here is an intention for good and benefit, and this meaning is religious love, not human love. This type of love is therefore quite unique, just like how you may invite a friend to your home due to wanting their presence and to host them to the best of your abilities. Inviting them to Islam with the same mentality is an example of exposing love to someone due to wanting good for them. This is the essence of unity. Bringing together people from all walks of life and making them bond through love and respect.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah. Never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
Among the things we can do to develop a culture of Muslim unity, we're rich to avoiding taking a strong position on a smaller points. Dear brothers and sisters, there is what's called a fiqh of priorities. And this essentially means that there are some aspects of Islam that are more important than others. For instance, it's more important to emphasize that Muslims establish prayer together than whether or not there should be a separate jama'ah between Shia and Sunni in mosques. Knowing what our priorities are will help us avoid making secondary issues of the faith factors of division in our communities. Muslim leaders, especially, must not only understand this, but implement it in their communities so that small differences do not ruin Muslim unity.
The whole world now is facing this growing epidemic, which is creating unprecedented challenges for mankind, for the governments, for the armies, for the health departments in every country, for the entire economies, for the world economy. And amid this stress and uncertainties, one has to remember to take care of his family and his community and his friends. I know many of us are worried about what will happen next week or next month. Is this going to continue for another 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks? We really don't know. Nobody can answer this question. Officials, governors, mayors, presidents, prime ministers are bewildered, confused. And we see developments, rapid developments, a cascade of developments every hour. But still, in the midst of this confusion, you have to be strong and you have to have hope. This is a time of unity and solidarity. Unity and solidarity. This is a time of social togetherness, because we are all of us are in this, no exception. And therefore, when we are asked by the authorities to stay at home, this staying at home, this isolation, does not mean, or social distancing, does not mean social disconnect. You still can connect with your friends from your bedroom, from your living room. You still can connect with your parents, with your siblings, with your friends. Check on them, ask about them. Don't abandon them. I know some heroes. I don't call them leaders. Heroes. They are really heroes. At the time of a crisis, you realize that they are real human heroes. God designated them to serve his people. They check on people. They go and ask. They knock at the doors. They call. Do you need help? I can come. I can do the shopping for you. I can take you if you have a necessary trip. I can take you. If you want to leave your house, if you need any help, I am there. Those are heroes. Here we find the beauty of the humanity.
Brothers and sisters, that was all for today's special. Thank you very much for joining us. Again, I congratulate the Week of Unity to all brothers and sisters in faith and humanity. Have a nice time.
Mustafa,
you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.